Welcome to We Empower, the radio show that inspires you to embrace your potential, resilience, and strength. In these challenging times, we're here to help you unlock your power to overcome obstacles, pursue your dreams, and shape a brighter future. I'm Anna Bertanes, your host for this empowering hour. Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of We Empower. I'm thrilled to have you all with us today. So sit back, get ready to be inspired. Let's make today count. And today's episode, we're diving into recapping a really standout moment from the previous week before treating you to a song that hints at the intriguing personality of our special guest for today. Joining us today is Christoph Holonek, who will be sharing inspirational insights with us. Following that, I will introduce you to a special book. Today, it's this one. And to wrap things up, we'll open the floor to one of your questions, if we have some time left. So we have some really challenging days behind us. We had the Trump election. We had also some political changes in Germany. And of course, in addition, we have the poly crisis, which is challenging some people nowadays. But besides this, we have, of course, also our good news, which is people which are engaging themselves for the ecosystem, for the planet, and also for a world worth living in. So today we have here Christoph Holonek, and I'm very happy to have him here because he is one of the voices who hasn't stopped speaking what he thinks. He does it in an open way, and he does it in a very positive way. And it's not greenwashing how he does it, but he speaks in German, we say, Klartext. So he speaks what he thinks, what has to be done, but he's also not closing the eyes on, against this, what we have been done. So I'm very, very happy to have him here because Christoph is one of the people, I'd say, whom you should know if you want to talk about last century's business in the telecom, in the media sector. He's one of the people you should know, and he's one of the people where it's super interesting to talking to. So I would like to welcome him and would like to do it with a song he selected. And then I'm really looking forward to start the talk with you, Christoph. Welcome here to the show.
Is it getting better? Or do you feel the same? Will it make it easier on you now? You got someone to blame. You say one love, mm-hmm. one life. It's one need, and I mm-hmm. one love. Get to share it. Ooh. Leaves you, darling. You don't care. Alphabet. Mary.
Disappoint you or leave a bad taste in your mouth. You act like you never had the, and you want me to go without. Well, it's too late tonight to drag the past out into the light. Carry each other, oh, oh, oh. forgiveness? Have you come to raise the dead? Have you come here to play Jesus to the lepers in your head?
What a wonderful start into nowadays talk show. I'm very much looking forward to our talk, to my talk with Christoph Wolanek, a pioneer in subscriptions and digital transformation, boosting investments 10 times. 30 years of innovation in books, music, and telecoms behind him. Welcome, Christoph, here in the talk show.
Thank you very much, Annabelle. Thanks for welcoming me in such a kind way.
I'm very happy that I could not only welcome you with these words, but also with the song you sorted out. And we talked beforehand about that. And when I heard the song, some ideas came up to me, and also some lines of the song, such as, we are one, but we are not the same. We get to carry each other. I think this is more actual than ever. And it's interesting because the song was made, it's a part of this album, Achtung Baby, of the group U2, which were in this time about breaking and really situations where they were not sure if they could stay together. And then they made this song, which is very powerful, of unity and reconciliation and reflecting on the challenges of relationship, the human need for connection, and also the themes of struggle, forgiveness, dynamics, togetherness. So all these topics, which are topics from nowadays, for example, giving in or expressing of course, or is talking about as a symbol for situations just as we have currently, for example, in the United States, where more than the half of the population voted for Trump, where the others are currently sometimes somehow shocked if you listen to the results of questionnaires, of surveys. What would you say? Is this togetherness, does it need a new new understanding in nowadays situation of having so many conflicting potentials?
Well, I think individuals are overwhelmed with the level of conflicts throughout the world.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that has definitely changed is that, any negative energy that is created by wars, by weather conditions, even small accidents are kind of like widespread through the media all over the world. Strange enough, whenever a big accident is happening anywhere in the world, if you listen to nations radio, they only mention it if there was somebody involved from your own population. But still, the negativity of news has definitely not been higher than it is today. I think that creates the sentiment for the individuals, that creates also their scream for the big leader and strong direction. And I think in that moment, people are not starving for ideology, they are just starving for this, like, strong leader that will protect them. And I like what you said about the song. When I was, you asked me what's my favorite song, and it's always difficult to have one favorite. But I think those words, those statements that you two and Mary J. Blige bring in the song, they, for me, this is a positive song. It's a little bit melancholic from the sound, but like then you pick up a couple of sentences and say, like, this is a wonderful world that we just need to, be strong ourselves and not wait for the others. Maybe that would be my major concern, that everybody's leaning back and waiting for the other ones to change, to protect, to be positive, to show the direction. That's what I live with on a daily basis in the company I'm working. People demand for leadership, demand for positiveness, but unfortunately have forgotten that they are part of the whole thing. And it's not a puzzle, is only a puzzle when all the pieces are there and not when everybody's leaning back. I think that is, maybe that is drawing down the issue, at least from my point of view.
Have we gotten too much in this idea of that everybody needs care, everybody needs positive vibrations? Are we starving this? Because we were given this more and more of because of social support from the government, or is it that we are starving because of the demand of this poly crisis outside?
I think life is definitely better than it has ever been before, because we have protection, we have social welfare. Never in the era of human beings as little people as today in the percentage point were starving. So objectively we are in a very good shape, but I think what we are missing out, and that is a result of digitization, unfortunately, is that people stop talking to each other. People are not challenging their own feelings and emotions with others than that we did before. If you think about, I keep telling people, why, if they ask me, why would I go to the office? I said, because you come out of a meeting and you're gonna talk to your colleague or friend and said, like, I did not enjoy the meeting, and they would give you a feedback, say, I enjoyed it, I found that a good point. Or they say, I did not like the outcome, I did not like the decision, and you have another individual that gives you a very different view. So we're missing the interaction, and missing interaction drives depression. There is a study I have heard of yesterday that, like, married people, couples are healthier, less depression, less alcoholism, less drugs. Well, I think that is a perfect fact. It's not even a symbol. It's a matter of fact that social interactivity protects us and makes us a more positive feeling.
I completely agree with you. And I think that COVID, this time where people had to get more isolated, sometimes even from people from family or good friends which were in hospital and they couldn't visit, and probably some of them died and they even couldn't say goodbye, hold their hands. I think this made a big gap or in the society worldwide, and made us wounded in a kind of, made us desperate for connecting, for hugs, for everything what comes from outside and gives us positive vibrations. And I think what you described in the company, that people are starving for that, that they often can't deal with negative critics, and they all want to have everything wrapped as a present, that first it comes a nice, and then inside there's maybe a tiny little bit critics. How can we change that? Because it feels that as if everybody is a kind of wounded. You can't say the truth. Discursion is a problem. If you tell the truth, the people get, oh my God, what are you doing? You're hitting. How could this be changed?
Well, I think if I had this, the pure recipe for that, I would be a very happy, very very happy person. I think first of all, we need to talk about it and we need to express it a bit more. The second is we need to tell people that freedom and peace is not a it's a result. And it's not a given, and the result of self-esteem, self-confidence, and a personal initiative. I think people need to learn again that being happy is not something that you can buy in a shop. It's something that you create yourself. I think that it sounds very philosophically, maybe, or my very mundane. You can choose either of the two, but. but it is what it is. You need to people need to understand that the only individual that can help themselves to feel better is themselves. It's not you cannot wait for the romantic story that will change your soul. I keep saying it's not that a career is not a result of luck. It's a result of creating chances for yourself, and I think that goes in the same way for your entire life. You need to take care. One needs to take care. And by the way, it's motivating if you get up in the morning and say, "I want this to be a great day for me," and I do everything to do so. The first thing you will learn, if you are purely egoistic, it will not work, because you will need to have the help and the support and the love and the hugs from the others to feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. Only if you give something to them, they will give it back to you. So that's an exercise. And I think it's going back to our DNA, and maybe we deny our DNA.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. I think you already started with giving a kind of hacks of self-esteem or of how to feel better. And you're right, it starts all with ourselves. But what can we do to jump over this comfort, waiting, the others can do? What can we do to escape from this, to jump over this, to get into ourselves, back to us?
Yeah, I think that is a $1 million question. I think it, but the simple answer is we should honestly, or in an honest way, talk to each other about our real feelings. I was not expecting this such a psychological conversation, but I think it's about opening yourself and telling others that you don't feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. Or that you're missing something. I do this. I do this with a lot of friends. I'm a manager, and among managers, it's not the typical thing you talk about private stuff. I do that very offensively. And the result is that others tell me, oh, I feel the same.
Yeah, I like that.
That makes a warm feeling and helps.
Yeah, I like that, because you give them also a piece of humanity and feeling human, feeling that they are real and authentic. And I think that gives them not only motivation, but it gives them also more energy, because it costs us a lot of energy being somebody else we normally would feel, or being somebody else we were told to be. So these are things which are super important. And I think if we come to leadership, this is a huge and important part of it. And you already started talking about that. So I'm looking forward to stepping also into leadership and the modern way of that, because you have a huge experience in this, after the break. So we see each other in a few minutes again. So stay tuned and we continue.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well Pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We talked in the first part of the talk show already about leadership, self-leadership of what COVID brought us. And we have here Christoph Vilonek, and I'm very happy to have him here because he is one of the business leaders you should really know, who drove digital change since the 90s and boost shareholder value on troubled times. So he's somebody you should really know. And he has to say something about leadership, which is really crucial. What are the key challenges that leaders face today? First off, you already started with a phrase that we also sent. Leadership starts with you. First of all, it is important to work on yourself. How can leaders nowadays support this with their employees? I mean, often I have the feeling that leaders nowadays should be a kind of chameleon, an animal with 1,000 feet, or several, should have a digital twin in addition, or have they cloned, because they have so many duties besides that what they already had in the past. And they have to get also right inside them. But how could they treat employees in the way that they help them, getting with them during these challenges, being able to face what agile working means, and dealing with these conflicts and challenges in nowadays world.
Well, first of all, I would definitely agree with you. I think leadership work has never been so difficult as today because the diversity of individuals on the one hand, but also the acceptance of everybody speaking out is different from the past. So things like hierarchy or authority are less protecting the leadership than it did in the past. But I think it's great and it's good and it's important. I mean, I can only talk about myself and my company. The first thing that I did is, and I think everybody can do that in his environment, I've introduced already 15 years ago an anonymous portal where people can ask questions straight to me. My company is about 4,000 individuals, and they can ask questions every day. The interesting thing is that, like, I mean, that's waves. Sometimes it's like once or twice, one or two in a week. Other weeks, it's like, depending on what's happening, maybe 5 or 10.
And do they know that you are answering by yourself?
Yes. That's one of the questions. This is kind of like every quarter comes the question, is this really good? But the good thing is, and I would always recommend to think about that, is you can clean up a lot of rumors that might otherwise create bad feelings, emotions, etc., etc. And I won't give examples. I think everybody can think of it. So you're killing negative rumors right from the beginning, because people would ask, like, why is there no extra salary? Why did you change this? Why didn't we do that? So that's the one thing. Create more facts and give yourself a platform to express facts and to explain things. By the way, in our intranet, this is the most, the heaviest clicked part of the intranet. People are really starving to get information. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, and that I think that we have talked about a couple of minutes ago before the break, I personally have, when I talk to individuals and people that report to me, I take a very personal view. We are less talking about what's your strategy, what's your tasks. I'm talking more about a framework of how do we work together. And I even push hard on personal things. I can share with you that I have my annual meeting, interview with my people these days. And there was one person, she's a lady, she's 46, and she asked me for the feedback. And I said, like, I cannot give you a new feedback because you've been working here for 8 years with me. So nothing has changed if I was unhappy. And if you were not doing a great job, you wouldn't be here anymore, either because you have felt it or would have told you. But yeah. I think the only observation I have is that you doubt yourself whether this is the right job for the next 10 years. And you could see that, like, she lost breath for 30 seconds because she said, how can you say that? I said, because that's what I feel. Tell me that I'm not true. And she said, no, you're absolutely true. I'm asking myself whether I'm on a turning point in my life.
Yeah.
And that is also concerning my professional life. And there is a strong independency between my private and my... And then we've been talking an hour about, like, what she's feeling, what her job is about, what options she had, what she's afraid of. And I'm not resolving her problem. But she has understood that she can talk to me about this without being afraid of, now he will put it into my file, or he will take the message that I was thinking about going away. And I think after that, it was such a good feeling among each other. And I said, listen, I mean, one thing you should know, I love the way you do your job, but I would not dislike you if you decided for yourself that you would do something else now. And she feels, or she felt, at least that's what I realized.
Yeah.
She felt taken serious, and she felt that the job, I understand that the job is such an important thing in her life, and she did not want to disappoint me. And now she knows that there is no disappointment possible, because I can understand her feelings. So, I mean, can you do that with 10,000 people? No, but in reality, none of us has 10,000 people reporting into him or her. It's like 5 or 10 people. And if you live this, and if you show them that, some of them will translate that in their conversations with their subordinates. And I think then you create a pyramid of, more trust. And trust is not about empowering. It's not about you can do more. It's not about feedback on effect-based feedback on the KPIs. It's about sensitivity and showing. And we are different individuals, but I think everybody can show empathy.
Mm-hmm. I like this very much, this word you said, empathy, that people know that it's about themselves and that it's not because of your job that you are doing this, but it's a bit more. It's extra mile you are going, which is the time you try to understand them, which is the time where you're just listening to them, where it's the time to just where you try to feel with them, get into that, what they currently have as a topic, which might be something completely different than the job. They feel it might be the job, but maybe it isn't. Maybe it's a life crisis. Maybe it's that they started understanding that life is more than just functioning, that life is more than just fulfilling a role somebody has given you. And often it's been said that Gen Z is the generation which is just asking about that, which is just saying that no role is given and want to define a new role. And of course, you can't say this is Generation Z, this is Generation Y. But would you say that generations, that this is something which makes it hard for the companies, but also for the Gen Zs themselves to fit into a structure which is much older than themselves, a structure which is made in times where what you said, for example, these small crises from all over the world weren't getting into our nowadays and everyday's brain and making us or giving us the feeling that we are insecure?
Well, I think the Gen Z is certainly something that also made me struggle. Mm-hmm. It made me struggle because what I just described, when I deployed to them, they could not cope with it. Mm-hmm. My interpretation was that I can't get through and I can't get the message through. And later on, I understood that they couldn't understand or they couldn't cope with my, let's say, more emotional approach. And mm-hmm. I think that supports very much what you said. I think they are also stuck in a problem. Mm-hmm. It's not that they are in big happiness and they are asking for a lot of spare time and work-life balance. I have always asked them, like, okay, we give you even more freedom. You can like work from home, and I don't want to intimidate you, but can you please tell me what you make with your spare time? Can you share with me? Because I'm sometimes during the weekend, I desperately think of what, how can I make use of my time? And so I was expecting that they give me like hundreds of things that they would meet with other people and they would like, I don't know, paint, be musicians or something. And it turned out that they are quite bored. They don't make so much use. And I'm not saying it's all of them. I'm saying it was like my little sample.
Yeah.
And it turned out that they are starving for more spare time and more freedom, mm-hmm. but then they don't make use of it.
Mm.
I think Bertelsmann Institute has done a study in Germany which came out with a similar result. So I think confronting them with the result of their own request and asking them like, what would you do with it? Will not resolve the problem, but will open their eyes that they are asking for something because they kind of expect Wonderland if you give them more time, but then they realize shit, Wonderland is the same flat, the same apartment again. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't change my life. So there must be something else behind it. I haven't discovered it, but I realized that I don't know what the next one is. I think Generation Alpha.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that if I look at the trainees that we hire today, they are already next generation. They have overcome. So I think Gen Z very much, unfortunately, the ones that have been hit by the corona crisis and the isolation. And we need to re-socialize them.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And this is not a few people. That's a whole generation. You stick into or put your finger into a few and you see everywhere the same, this unsecureness. On the other hand, they seem to be very good at rhetoric. But if you put your finger into a wound you find, then it's like exploding in the idea that you feel that you have to do now psychotherapy with them. And this is, of course, a shame. But yes, I completely agree with you. I think we have to give this generation other support. They have deserved to make them available for feeding themselves and for feeding also in a company or feeding in a company and even also feeding for the planet. If we talk about the organizational transformation, we also see that this picture of the people itself is mirroring on the organizational level. Because we see, for example, we already discussed about the political situation where you also said the people are calling for somebody who fix the problems. They are so struggling with all this situation around them. They just want to have safety, security. That's all they want. And they are willing to give up democracy for that. They're willing to give up privacy, freedom, all these things that we're fighting for in the past. But it is because of these challenges we are facing and of this many things which are just we get every day so that we have the feeling we don't know how to get rid of this or how to consume it or how to fix it. And in German, we have also, in addition, still this German angst, the worries, the doubts, which is about which party I choose, with leader I choose, with partner even privately I choose or stay with company I choose. What do you think about this? What does a nation like Germany needs nowadays?
I think that we will not overcome the German angst. I think it's a mentality and it's deep in the culture. that is unfortunate. I'm Austrian, so I'm a bit. My socialization is a bit different, but I live so many years in Germany and married to a German woman. So I think you need to give. I mean, that's again, it's a matter of empathy. The Germans will not, they are not as convinced as maybe the Americans that they broke it, I'll fix it. If you do that in Germany, somebody will ask, how will you fix it? So we are more engineers. We want to have more data to it, more beef on the bone. So in the organization, and I think that's what you're referring to, If I look carefully on what I did the last 12 months as a CEO, I give more statements, more straight statements again. Mm-hmm. I try to give directives in a sense, not on the individual basis, but more on a what individuals would call strategy of the company. Mm-hmm. I keep saying the demand or the people that ask for strategy at the end of the day, they ask for security. So I try to talk more about how safe the company is, what our growth plans for 2028 or 2030 are, that we are aware of in this or that segment of a challenge, but we are already working on it. So maybe I talk more about the problems plus that we take care of, mm-hmm. plus work hard on a solution. I'll promise that we will share whatever we find out. So I think more transparency is a way because then this German angst turns into German engineering. I'm part of the solution. I can contribute. Please let me know what I'm supposed to do, because if I'm doing something, it's better than to do nothing. There is no general recipe for it. When you look at the German automobile industry, where they talk now, they have no answer on the electronic cars. Mm-hmm. I mean, what is reality?
Yeah.
We've been producing electronic cars for 10 years, but the demand in Germany is low for a couple of good reasons and a couple of stupid reasons. So I think it's not a way to tell the people constantly that we have not gone or we have not understood that there's a change. It's about we are changing. This is coming. 10 of you will continue working. 5 of you might lose their job. But by the way, we will need to service the combust engines for another 20 years. So make it more transparent. Don't talk about extremes. Talk about solutions. Tell them what they are part of and tell them what they could contribute. I think that is it. You will not resolve it, but you can soften the issue. And you will realize that 90% of the people will accept and will appreciate that managers and leaders are trying to make them part of the solution. I think that's it. But it's something which you need to do every day, and it's not done. It will never be done.
That's right. Thank you so much, Christoph, for your insights. And I would have plenty of other questions, for example, about AI and other stuff. So hopefully we can get a second series about that. But for now, it's my turn to say thank you. Thank you very much for the insights you gave us. And we would like to be all part of the solution, right? Not part of the problem.
So thank you very much to you.
Thank you. So looking forward to seeing you soon. And we will have now a small break and continue afterwards with a very interesting book, which could be a kind of life changer. Thank you.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with the skin comfort formula online and in stores now.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck. Fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So after the talk with Christoph Vilenek, we step into something which is, after talking about restrictions, after talking about safety and security, and calling for the big one who's supporting us, who makes our life good, and we just have to wait. I've sorted out a book which came to my hand, which is already published first in the 80s. It is Free to Choose, a personal statement by Moulton and Rose Friedman. And they did it consequently on that on one of the covers, she's you see her, and on the other side of the cover, you see him. So it offers a compelling exploration of the power of economic freedom and personal choice in shaping societies. This thought-provoking work combines a clear exposure of complex economic theories with concrete examples, making it accessible to both experts and lay readers. The Friedmans argue passionately for the principles of free market capitalism, highlighting its role in fostering individual liberty, prosperity, and social progress. Throughout the book, they critic government overreach, proposing that excessive regulation stifles economic dynamism and limits personal freedom. With persuasive logic and a commitment to evidence-based argumentation, the author makes the case for minimal government intervention, illustrating how free market principles can better address issues of poverty, inequality, and economic stability. Their writing is at once incisive, rational, and deeply optimistic about human potential when liberated from constraints. And I know that and the Friedmans are not discussed, but I think in nowadays situation where limitations, where bureaucracy, where also are criticized. And on the other hand, the people like to have safety and security, like to sometimes somehow give up their privacy or part of this for security and safety, and democracy is going down. This book is super interesting. To give a bit of background of the authors, Morton Freeman, born in 1912 and died in 2006, was a Nobel Prize winning economist known for his groundbreaking contributions to the fields of monetary theory and consumption analysis. Born in Brooklyn, New York, Friedman grew up in a working class family, a background that significantly shaped his views on economic opportunity and an upward mobility. He was a key figure in the Chicago School of Economics and a passionate advocate for free market principles. Rose Friedman, his wife, was a distinguished economist and partner in Milton's work. Together, they championed economic policies that prioritized individual choice and minimized government intervention. Their lifelong mutual commitment to advancing human freedom and economic opportunity, and their collaboration produced influential works, including this book. The Friedmans wrote Free to Choose, in response to what they saw as the detrimental effects and of increasing government regulation and intervention in economies across the world, particularly during the 20th century. The book was intended as a counterpoint to collectivist and Keynesian economic policies that, they argued, limited personal freedoms and hindered market efficiency. Published first in 1980, it accompanied a PBS public debate about the role of free markets in society. The work was a rallying cry for those who believed in empowering individuals through economic liberty, serving as a manifesto for advocates of capitalism and a roadmap for policy makers. So, 7 tips from the books is personal responsibility is the key to individual and societal success. Government intervention should be limited to essential functions like maintaining law and order. Free market competition forces innovation, efficiency, and economic growth. Excessive taxation and regulation stifle economic dynamism. Consumer choice, not centralized planning, should guide economic decisions. And education should empower individual choice through school vouchers. Social welfare programs should focus on empowerment rather than dependency. So, a summary with 5 quotes from the author. Underlying most arguments against a free market is a lack of belief in freedom itself. The great advances of civilization, whether in architecture or painting, in science or literature, in industry or agriculture, have never come from centralized government. A society that puts equality before freedom will get neither. A society that puts freedom before equality will get a high degree of both. So, concentrated power is not rendered harmless by the good intentions of those who create it. Only a crisis, actual or perceived, produces real change. When that crisis occurs, the actions that are taken depend on the ideas that are lying around. And now I chose a few parts of the book which I would like to read to you. So again, the cover and the back of this book. And I will start with this chapter, What's Wrong with Our Schools? Education has always been a major component of American dream. In pure New England, schools were quickly established first as an adjunct on the church, later taken over by secular authorities. After the opening of the Erie Canal, the farmers who left the Rocky Hills of New England for the virgin plains of the Middle East established schools wherever they went, not only primary and secondary schools, but also seminaries and colleges. Many of the immigrants who streamed over the Atlantic in the second half of the 19th century had a thirst for education, eagerly seized the opportunities available to them in the metropolis and large cities where they mostly settled. At first, schools were private and attendance was strictly voluntary. Increasingly, government came to play a larger role, first by contributing to financial support, later by establishing and administering government schools. The first compulsory attendance law was enacted by Massachusetts in 1852, but attendance did not become compulsory in all states until 1918. Government control was primarily local until went into the 20th century. The neighborhood school and control by the local school board was a rule. Then a so-called reform movement got underway, particularly in the big cities, marked by the wide differences in the ethnic and social composition of different school districts and by the belief that professional educators should play a larger role. That movement gained additional ground in the 1930s, along with a general tendency toward both expansion and centralization of government. We have always been proud, and with good reason, of the widespread availability of schooling to all and the role that public schooling has played in fostering the assimilation of newcomers into our society, preventing fragmentation and divisiveness, and enabling people from different cultural and religious backgrounds to live together in harmony. Unfortunately, in recent years, our educational record has become tarnished. Parents complain about the declining quality of the schooling their children receive. Many are even more disturbed by the danger to their children's physical well-being. Teachers complain that the atmosphere in which they are required to teach is often not conducive to learning. Increasing numbers of teachers are fearful about their physical safety, even in the classroom. Taxpayers complain about growing costs. Hardly anyone maintains that our schools are giving the children the tools they need to meet the problems of life. Instead of fostering assimilation and harmony, our schools are increasingly a source of the very fragmentation that they earlier did so much to prevent. At the elementary and secondary level, the quality of schools varies tremendously. Outstanding in some wealthy suburbs of major metropolises, excellent or reasonable, satisfactory in many small towns and rural areas, incredibly bad in the inner cities of major metropolises. And I would like to go back. The two ideas of human freedom and economic freedom working together came to their greatest fruition in the United States. Those ideas are still very much with us. We are all embedded with them. They are part of the very fabric of our being. But we have been straying from them. We have been forgetting the basic truth of that the greatest threat to freedom is a concentration of power, whether in the hands of government or anyone else. We have persuaded ourselves that it is safe to grant power, provided it is for good purposes. Fortunately, we are waking up. We're again recognizing the dangers of an overgoverned society, coming to understand that good objectives can be perverted by bad means. The reliance on the freedom of people to control their own lives in accordance with their own values is the surest way to achieve the full potential of a great society. Fortunately, also, we are as a people still free to choose which way we should go, whether to continue along the road we have been following to ever bigger government or to call a halt and change direction. So this is about free to choose. And I'd like to slip now into something really actual. Because you know that we just had the election of Trump and against Kamala Harris, and there are some interesting information we can gain out of current surveys, which I would like to share with you, which tells a lot about the public opinion and of the wake of Trump's 2024 election victory. I would like to give you now some insights from Economist and YouGov latest survey. In a major new poll, the Economist and YouGov conducted immediately following Election Day, voters shared their reaction, expectations, and reflections on the process and outcome of this year's presidential election. While many results provide a deeper look at American attitudes, one of the clearest takeaways is that nearly all voters felt certain about their decision. A striking 96% believe they cast the right vote, choosing for, not against. Interestingly, most voters across party lines reported voting for their candidates, not just to oppose the alternative. Among Trump voters, 84% made their selection out of strong preference for the former president. Comparatively, 60% of Kamala Harris voters said they supported her candidacy more than simply trying to prevent Trump's win. This difference paints a picture of a highly mobilized electorate with highly, deeply personal motivations on both sides of an aisle. For Trump voters, this election appears to have been a source of enthusiasm, with 77% expressing that they were excited by the results and an additional 20% saying they were satisfied. The stakes of an election. Overall, voters see the recent election as highly consequential for the nation. with 79% believing it will have a significant impact on the country and 40% anticipating direct personal effects. Surprises were a notable theme in these post-election reactions. Nearly half of registered voters found themselves somewhat of very surprised or very surprised by the outcome. Among Harris voters, 66% expressed surprise compared to only 30% of Trump voters. Similarly, many felt that Trump performed better than expected. Harris, meanwhile, received fewer votes than anticipated, where Harris voters particularly taken aback. A substantial 82% felt she underperformed. Trust in the outcome and reactions to the result. Despite the intensity of the campaign and pre-election skepticism, trust in the process held firm for a majority of voters, even if we are currently in the area of AI and technology, which was also some topic in the first behind that, because people were not sure if some people maybe manipulated it. But interestingly, it is evolving perspectives post-election. The political landscape shifted immediately following the election. Republican views of the country's direction saw a notable boost, with the proportion of those expressing optimism nearly tripling compared to the week before. Conversely, among Democrats, positively dropped by roughly half, reflecting disappointment and apprehension about the path forward. So, what is the conclusion? This poll captures an American electorate deeply engaged, divided, and reflective. While trust in the election's legitimacy holds a majority, the varying reactions underline a country grappling with its future direction. For some, the results represent hope, an reaffirmation of their beliefs. For others, it raises doubts and concerns about the challenges ahead. As one chapter closes in Americans' democratic journey, it remains clear that the story is far from over, with trust, optimism, and expectation continuing to shape the road ahead. For policymakers and political leaders, these insights emphasize the necessity of addressing the underlying causes of distrust and division, engaging in transparent communication, promoting bipartisan initiatives, and actively working to rebuild confidence in democratic institutions are crucial steps toward bridging the partisan divide. So what are recommendations for navigating the post-election landscape? Of course, engage in constructive dialogue, seek diverse perspective, participate in civic activities, and educate on media literacy, and try to do education and further education as transparent as possible, telling each and everyone how democracy works and how you can raise your voice for the better. So by implementing these strategies, everybody can contribute to be a more informed and cohesive society, even amidst political differences. So here, our show comes to an end. And I'm very sorry about this because I would have so much else to share with you. But that wraps up now our episode for today. So don't hesitate and get involved. Your voice is valued, and together we can make a difference. Thank you for being part of our community. And until next time, keep shining and empowering others. Together, we rise. Thank you.
Is it getting better? Or do you feel the same? Will it make it easier on you now? You got someone to blame. You say